Hello, you're listening to Speaking of History, the podcast with a focus on education, technology, and history.
Luckiest man on the face of the earth.
Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream today.
This would have fighting power.
Hello, welcome to Speaking of History. My name is Eric Langhorst. I am an 8th grade American history teacher in Liberty, Missouri, and you're listening to a podcast that has a focus on education, technology, and history. Today's podcast episode is number 155, and I'm recording this on the evening of August 6th, 2008. Well, last week I was down in Huntsville, Alabama, and attended the International Teacher Space Camp, and had a great time, met a lot of great people, listened to some great speakers, did some really cool activities. But I would say probably one of the highlights for my week was listening to Grace Corrigan speak. Grace is the mother of Krista McAuliffe, the first teacher in space, and she gave a great presentation about her daughter. We were also able to get a copy of her book, which is entitled A Journal for Krista, Krista McAuliffe, Teacher in Space. And I did start reading the book a couple days ago, and it's an amazing book. It talks about Krista and her preparation for the shuttle, and just really gives kind of a personal view of astronaut Krista McAuliffe. I learned some amazing things about Krista McAuliffe from this presentation by Mrs. Corrigan that I had not known earlier. I did not know that Krista was actually a history teacher, so I know many people that are listening to this podcast are history teachers, and I thought that was very interesting. And I guess depending on your age, you have probably a different experience with where you were at in January of 1986 when the accident happened with the shuttle. I can remember I was in Howells, Nebraska. I was an 8th grader, and I was in art class. And there were several classrooms in the building that were watching the shuttle launch because it was the first teacher in space. We were not watching it particularly in art class that day, but I can remember somebody running in and saying that the space shuttle had exploded. And a lot of the people's first thoughts as 8th graders and high school students was that the Russians had something to do with the space shuttle blowing up, like they had sabotaged it or you know, struck it with the missile or something like that. And to this day, I think that's kind of, when I think of the Cold War, I think of that incident, because it's kind of amazing to me today that as soon as the space shuttle blew up, that was one of our first instincts was, oh my gosh, the Russians, you know, shot at the space shuttle. But she gave a really interesting talk about Krista, and I was able to record it, and I want to share that with you here today. So this is a presentation by Grace Corrigan, and I'm going to have a link on the blog that has a direct link if you'd like to purchase this book. And if you are a teacher, if you have any interest in, you know, kind of finding out more about a fellow teacher that really was an extraordinary person, I would definitely recommend this book. So without further ado, this is Grace Corrigan from the International Teacher Space Camp in Huntsville, Alabama, in July of 2008.
Thank you all so much. It's really such a pleasure to be here. It's wonderful to be asked back, and I love meeting all of you, and I want to say congratulations to each and every one of you, and also thank you so much for the job you're doing. It's the most important job in the world. So keep it up and enjoy every bit of it. And again, I thank you. Thank you, and thank you for being here. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about Krista, but I wish I could speak to you in Krista's words. And I cannot, of course, and I cannot even tell you what she'd say if she were here. But I can tell you, however, something special about her and about what she valued. And I can share with you the perspective of those who were closest to her. Thank you. And those who were loved by her. So in the end, perhaps you'll agree that Krista was a worthy forerunner of yours. She had something to teach. You know, with a lesson of simplicity. But the most important lesson of all, how to live well, not easily, but well. Now, as a history teacher, Krista was concerned that the social history, the history of the ordinary person, who was often pushed aside and was forgotten. And she taught history of the common people in her classes. She taught us through letters and diaries and journals. And she has to send her students out of the classroom to interview ordinary people. People, you know, World War II veterans, Vietnam veterans, grandparents, great-grandparents, those who could give them a viewpoint of what life was all about. And she felt very strongly that it was the common man and the woman who were important because they contributed to history. Krista encouraged her students to keep journals, and she was going to keep a journal for her teacher in space project. She was going to humanize the technology of the space age, and she was going to prove there were real people up there. Now, she originated a course called The American Woman. It was a social history of women to promote good role models for girls. One of those role models happened to be a state senator from New Hampshire. And I just happened to be with this senator a few years back when we were interviewing finalists for the New Hampshire Kristen McCall sabbatical. And during one of the breaks, we had an opportunity to chat. And she laughingly recalls the time she was in Chris's classroom. She said, you know, those kids were horrible. They were squirming around. They didn't pay much attention. And some of the kids in the back of the room were even holding hands. And during the question and answer period, the girls kind of sat mute. And they dashed out when the bell rang. And she didn't that Miss Chris was going to apologize for this behavior when she turned it on to her. Instead, she said, you know, Susan, the girls were much too shy to speak out of the boys being here. But she said, you know, you did make a good impression, something they're going to both think very seriously about. But you know what else, Susan? That was good for you. So, it was in the spring of 1984, President Ronald Reagan announced, today, I'm directing NASA to begin a search in all elementary and secondary schools to choose the first private citizen passenger in our space program. And that's going to be one of America's finest, a teacher. Because he said teachers are our best communicators, and they're going to be able to communicate the wonders of space through the eyes of a private citizen, not an astronaut. Well, you know, there were over 11,500 teachers throughout the country that did complete that application. And Krista dropped hers at Bell Slot. February 1st, 1985 was the very last day that that application could be accepted. She was always running late. And at Conger High School, the principal announced over the public address system, he said, you know, we have a contender for the teacher in space program, and that contender is Mrs. McCullough. So one of the students stopped her in the hallway and he asked her for her autograph. She gave it to him saying, whatever for? And then the first cut was made. Krista became one of the two delegates from New Hampshire to become teacher in space. Ken walked to her and says, see, it's worth more already. There was a question on the teacher in space application. Why do you want to be the first private citizen to go into space? And Krista answered, I remember the excitement in my home when the first satellites were launched. My parents were amazed, and I was caught up in that wonder. In school, my classes gathered around the television, and they tried to follow that rocket as a bump stole around the screen. And I remember when Alan Shepard made his historic flight. It wasn't even in orbit, and I was thrilled. John Kennedy inspired me with his words about placing a man on the moon. I still remember a cloudy rainy day, driving through Pennsylvania, hearing the news that the astronauts had landed safely on the moon. Now, as a woman, I had been envious of the men who could participate in the space program, and they were encouraged to excel in math and science. And I felt women had indeed been left out of one of the most exciting careers available. Then Sally and I, another woman, began to train as astronauts. And I could look among my students, and I could see ever-increasing list of opportunities for them. Now, I cannot join the space program, restart my life as an astronaut. for this opportunity to connect my abilities as an educator with my interest in history and in space. It's a unique opportunity to fulfill my early fantasies. I watch the space age being born, and I would like to participate. Now, Christian was a very loving, happy person, and she saw the best in everyone. And she always shared that enjoyment at every opportunity. She extended herself, as good teachers all do, as you all know. And many a teenager with problems during when she was teaching school there, they would find a safe haven in her home. And her teacher and her husband was an attorney, and he often cautioned Krista about the legality of this practice. And so she said to him, "So sue me." And then when she was called to Washington, D.C. to compete with the other 113 teachers for the Teacher in Space program, I gave her some motherly advice. Of course, and I said, "Now make sure you have a good night's sleep, get good rest, and take along an extra pair of stockings in case you get a rough." So when she arrived in D.C., she called me, and I asked her, I said, "You know, did you get a good night's sleep? Are you rested?" And she said, "Well, not really," she said, "but I'm okay." So it was about 10 o'clock that evening, and the doorbell rang. And there was a young girl from school, and she stood there, and she was obviously very much in stress. She was really wanting to harm herself. So Krista said, of course, I brought her in, and I finally calmed her down. And I was able to notify her parents and be able to send her home. It was well after 2 o'clock, and so much for a good night's sleep. But the next 2 weeks were very exciting for all of the teachers. They met President Reagan, they met astronauts, and they met many other dignitaries. And from Washington, 10 of these teachers went on to Houston for 2 more weeks of judging and of training. And during that training, the last 2 hours test, was an interview with Dr. Terrence McGuire. He was an anxious consulting psychiatrist. And then he called Krista one of the most broad-based, best-balanced people he had ever met. He said, "You know, a lot of people don't see themselves as okay these days. Someone like Krista has a more objective view of who she is and what she's about. That means understanding and accepting her vulnerabilities as well as her strengths. It doesn't mean that she thinks she's perfect, that she isn't changing, doesn't want to change, but you know, she has a very good idea of who she is, and what she sees is pretty good." So, you know, that's very unusual today. And I know this doesn't sound scientific, but I think she's neat. And Alan Ludwig was head of NASA's Space Flight Participant Program, and he said, "We were looking for someone who would be able to feel this experience in their heart and soul, and to be able to convey that experience to others. Jesus has a spirit and she's infectious when she's around people." You know, the 10 finalists became very, very close during their 2 weeks together. And then they decided, when the public announcement was going to be made of who was going to be the teacher in space, they decided that they wanted to know before the public announcement. And so the day that the announcement was going to be made, the 10 teachers and NASA's panel of judges, they were all having lunch just before the announcement. And soon after lunch, Nick and Wayne and Krista were enjoying quiet chat on cooking. And Krista laughingly described the way that Steve, her husband, practically lived under one place when she was away from home. And Bradley was looking in, and she politely broke into the conversation. She looked Krista right in the eye, and she said, "You better tell your husband to stop up on one place." So Krista didn't quite understand it for the moment, and then she gasped. And the other teachers were looking on, of course, and then Anne Bradley was smiling. She says, "Oh, you're the one that's going up in space." And there were a lot of hugs and congratulations, and of course, a lot of them saw their greetings were not a shot down, but they all rushed over, gave her a hug, and then all of a sudden, Krista began to believe what was happening. So Krista was going to fly. But you know, she saw this year of her space experience. It was a grand and welcome opportunity for education. It was going to be an opportunity to draw our attention in a very positive way to schools, our children, and to the community involved in improving our flagging educational system. It was going to be a year of awareness, the elevations of the role of what the teacher should be. And she knew, of course, that all of you teachers were going to be her strongest critics, and they were going to be, you were all going to be watching her very carefully. You'd be judging her because she did represent you. And this really was a tremendous responsibility. But she gladly accepted it because she was a committed teacher. And she felt that this shared experience would enhance the role of teachers, improve education, inspire her students, those young people who are our future. But some of the media tried to suggest that her primary goal was to make money. To use this honor as a stepping stone to a career change. They seemed to know so little about schools and the teaching profession. And Krista would get very exasperated. Anything would be better, said Tifa, than teaching, said one reporter. And another one said, all you have to do is be yourself. Teaching is easy. And she tried to assure them that teaching was an honorable, difficult, essential profession. And she not only said privately, but she put it on the public record at every opportunity that she could. And she would indeed be in Concord High School that fall of 1986. Because she said, if a teacher's face does not return to the classroom, something is wrong. And I assure you, Krista was going to continue her career in education. You know, she wanted the lessons that she was going to be teaching from space, that was going to be televised from space her way, not NASA's way. Each lesson was going to last only 20 minutes as the shuttle passed over the Caribbean within range of a tracking and a batting relay satellite that was orbiting 23,000 miles above the coast of Brazil. There was going to be very little margin for error, and of course NASA wanted those lessons to be scripted. But Krista said, you know, this isn't a stage play. Teachers don't need speeches. All they need are the lesson plans and their students. You know, it's worked on Earth forever. It's going to work up in space. So NASA said, okay, we'll do it. But after Krista was chosen to be teacher in space, she thought about her role when she returned. Her primary concern was to help teachers improve their status in the community. She wanted to use her position to enhance the image of teachers, to truly make others aware of your importance, to realize that quality education and dedicated educators are an essential component for a successful society. Excuse me. And Krista believed, as I'm sure you all do, that we are all students, and that as teachers, Girl Scouts, education, educators, parents, administrators, we all never stop learning. And only through constantly trying new methods and searching for a better way of presenting the curriculum to our students can we truly reach our own potential as educators and help the students to rise theirs. But she saw her space experience as a grand and welcome opportunity for education. It was going to be an opportunity to draw attention to in a positive way to our schools, our children, and community involvement in improving our flagging educational system. It was going to be a year of awareness and the elevation of the role of teachers to where it should be. Because she knew that all of your teachers were going to be her strongest critics and were going to be judging her. Because, of course, she represented you. And this was a tremendous responsibility. But she gladly accepted it because she was a committed teacher. And she felt that this shared experience would enhance the role of teachers, improve education, inspire the students. All of those young people are our future. The critics of the Teacher in Space program that said that Crystal was a public relations pawn. She was being used by the Reagan administration to gain favor with the teachers, and she was being used by NASA to gain favor with the space program. We know this was probably true, but Crystal believed that she could improve public perception of teachers and enhance the public interest, especially the children's interest in not just space program, but more importantly, in education. Press conferences were regularly held at Johnson Space Center in Houston. And during one of the first press conferences, general visitors, including a group of students on a field trip, were permitted in the press room to watch. And when the reporters finished with their questions, the students came up, gathered around Crystal on the stage, and they began to ask her questions. And she saw them listening very carefully to her answers, taking in every word, what space was like, what her program was like, what she was doing. And she thought then, you know, it's really working. This program is working. But the media kept insisting that Crystal change. She said, when you appear on The Tonight Show and are featured in People magazine and in life, you're no longer an average person. You're a public figure. And Crystal said, well, you know, that's good, because then I'll have success in reaching people. When I go into a television station and I'm on the radio, I can't wait to tell the students all about it. But then the media wanted to know what her reaction was when she was asked for an autograph. And she laughed and she said, do you know how many hall passes I sign every day? But they persist and they say that she would never have to go into the classroom again. And then Krista said, but that's the answer. I want to go back. And they said, but welcome fame years for the asking. And then Krista said, you're talking to a teacher. She said she never would have chosen her career to get monetary rewards. That wouldn't be it. She was enjoying what she was doing. It was an extraordinary year, a year out of her life, but she definitely wanted to go back to the classroom. She was a teacher. And she wanted her lessons to be televised from space her way, not NASA's way. And she said then, of course, that teachers do not need speeches, they just need their students and their classroom. But she couldn't wait to be above the earth, to be able to see a beautiful planet, to be able to see a fragile global village without boundaries, and to be able to relate to everyone that we should all share the spaceship Earth. Now, we are not different countries and different people. We should all live together and work together peacefully. But all this was she was already fostering in the international relations class. Well, of course, you know, Crystal never did see that global village from space, and she never did have that chance to teach her lessons that she was so ready to teach. But her mission and her spirit is still ongoing, even after all these years. But you see, my daughter, Krista Corrigan McCullough, she was a different breed from the dedicated astronauts. They were professional scientists. They were making space their life work. And she remained mindful. She was not an astronaut, but a flight participant. She was not a technician, but she was a teacher, a communicator. The seven Challenger crew, Dick, Mike, Judy, Ron, Ellison, Ray, and Krista, they have been called representative that is best in all of us and in America. They're men and women. They were black, white, and yellow. They were from Protestant, Jewish, Catholic, and Buddhist origins. They came from cities and rural backgrounds. They were accomplished athletes, football, tennis, karate, softball, racquetball, weight training, and they were boy and girls. They were boy and girls scouts. They played the piano, the saxophone, the guitar. And they held master degrees and they held doctorate degrees. They were engineers, pilots, designers, and a teacher. They really were a human treasury of knowledge, of caring, and of life's experiences. You know that they had all achieved that American dream. But ladies and gentlemen, that dream did not die 73 seconds after it fell. The place, time, and the circumstances of their death merely affirmed their philosophy of life to get as much out of life as possible. You know, support throughout the world has been really overwhelming, and is still overwhelming. Letters from all walks of life had arrived and still keep arriving. And share a couple of letters that have came in from children. One of them had said, "They're really lost, they're going to find their way home." And then some of them said, "My teacher's making me like this." And one of them said, "My teacher's not making me like this." And one of them said, "I was going to be a teacher, but it's too dangerous." And one of the little boys said, "I watched the liftoff of my class and it ruined my whole day." And then there is a letter I want to share with you. It came from New Hampshire not too long ago. And it said, "Hi, this is Corey. My name is Corey. And I have a little black goat." She said, "My little black goat, she means Crystal McCullough." Yep. And my mother said, "You can't call a goat Crystal McCullough. Why? Crystal McCullough." And Corey said, I said to my mother, I said, "Crystal McCullough was a winner, and my little black goat's going to be a winner." So in that letter, Corey sent me, was two pictures of Corey with his little black goat, Crystal. Mm-hmm. One picture, she had ribbons all around her neck, and the other picture, she had a grand champion ribbon. So Corey said, "See, Mrs. Corrigan, your Crystal was a winner. But my Crystal's a winner, too." And you know, Challenger Learning Centers for children, so they can see what mission control and what astronauts do. They can go to the moon and they can go to Mars. And these have been established by the families of the Challenger Center. Well, we have almost 60 of them around the country now. And we have some overseas. We have one in England and Canada and Japan. And there's more being on the drawing board that are going to be going up every day. And there's scholarships for the young and the not so young that have been established. So this has all been ongoing in 22 years. And just recently, there was an article in the paper that explained that now Crystal's lessons are going to be on the internet. The ones that 22 years ago that she never had that opportunity to teach, you'll be able to reach them on the internet. So you see, this is really ongoing. And there is also a part of the Space Education Handbook. I think that's written by Jerry Woodfield. And it's he's a longtime NASA engineer, and that was recently published, and our lessons are going to be in there. And then just a couple of weeks ago, there was a bill passed by the House of Representatives, and to honor Krista, it's going to be $10,000 scholarships given to three women studying aeronautics and space science. Now, this is past the House of Representatives. We're just waiting for the Senate to confirm it. So you see, something is ongoing continuously. So her legacy has been and is doing an awful lot of good. But you know, she was always a teacher. As much as she looked forward to flying in space, she was just a delight over the attention paid to teachers and their education. And in response to the question why, she said, "You know, I wanted to open the door. The fact that an ordinary person is able to fly says a lot about our future. You can always equate the astronauts with the explorers who are subsidized. But now, if you're getting somebody going just to observe, then you're going to get settlers. And what are you doing here? You're reaching for the stars. And in retrospect, the only time Christina understood me was when she said, speaking about the other nine finalists, and she said, you know, I made nine wonderful friends over the past 2 weeks, but when this shuttle goes up, there may be one body, but there will be 10 souls that I'm taking with. But you were wrong, Krista. You took every one of us. Thank you all, and congratulations.
The Speaking of History podcast is produced by Eric Langhorst, an 8th grade American history teacher at South Valley Junior High in Liberty, Missouri. This podcast has a Creative Commons Attribution non-commercial license. Show notes, links, videos, and pictures are available at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com. Music used in the intro and close is Technotrip, a track by Sounds Abound. You can learn more about their royalty-free music for schools at their website, www.soundzabound.com. Comments or questions about the podcast are always welcome, and you can contact Eric at speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and please remember, history is so much more than just a bunch of boring old dead guys.